good afternoon, Tri-States, and welcome to this edition of your radio magazine, Voices of the Tri-States. Today we are talking federal issues. Joining us by phone, I have Iowa Senator Charles Grassley. And Senator, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here today.
Hey, it's a little warmer here than it was in Iowa yesterday.
Oh, my gosh, Senator. I was just telling the folks around here, I think my feet are just kind of starting to kind of thaw out a little bit today. But, you know, it's winter. Well, not officially yet, I guess, but it's Iowa. And the most interesting part is they're talking about some 40-degree weather come Christmas Day. So
yeah. Let me tell you how bad it was Sunday. I went to the airport and waited around 12 hours before all the flights that I was on were canceled. And the reason that the flights couldn't go is because the machines that spray the airplanes were frozen up.
Wow. That's cold, Senator. Yeah. That's cold.
Yeah.
So are you out in Washington right now?
Yeah, I came out because I had to preside at the session of the Senate today. There wasn't any business to do, but under the Constitution, one chamber can't adjourn without the permission of the others for more than 3 days. So every third day we have what's called a pro forma session of the Senate. And to meet the constitutional requirements, it took me 38 seconds today to run the Senate.
You know, I bet some folks probably wish that was about every day, huh?
Yeah, you bet. Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this new administration coming up. And we haven't chatted since the election, as I recall. And, you know, with the Republican majority, we've now got the House and the Senate. Your hopes for the next session, Senator, just overall, what are we anticipating here?
Well, for me, as chairman of the Judiciary Committee, I think there's two things that'll have prime time of mine, and that would be Senator Sessions' nomination as Attorney General. It's got to be approved by the Senate. And then, and that's 2 days of hearings on January 10th and 11th, and then I don't know when it'll come up on the floor, but not until after the new president's inaugurated. And then once the president's inaugurated and we get Sessions out of the way, I think it'll be the next Supreme Court nomination. So I don't expect a lot of legislation that comes out of my committee to pass the United States Senate until maybe April or May, because we'll be putting the cabinet people and the sub-cabinet secretaries into place. They all take Senate confirmation. As far as legislation is concerned, I think the number one thing on the Senate's agenda is going to be repeal of Obamacare.
With that repeal, is there some committee right now or someone who's charged with working on a replacement for that before we repeal that?
Yeah, that would be two committees in the House of Representatives, Ways and Means, and the Health Committee, called Commerce and Health Committee in the House of Representatives. In the Senate, we have the Health Committee under Senator Alexander, and we have the Finance Committee under Senator, Senator Hatch.
Oh, yeah.
They're working on it right now, yes.
Okay, so we will kind of stay tuned to that. One of the other real big issues that I know you and I have talked about is immigration. And I know during the presidential campaign, President-elect Trump has had some very strong ideas about immigration, including, you know, building a gigantic wall and and you and I have talked about this, enforce the laws that are already on the books. What's the anticipation here?
I think building the wall would require Congress to act if there's some financing necessary to do it. And what I don't know is how Trump is going to get Mexico to pay for it or not. I would have my doubts, so there'll probably be some funding for that. But don't forget, building a wall in the sense of a physical wall, like the Berlin Wall between Russia and the United States, Britain, and France after World War II, doesn't necessarily have to be done, because in some respects, letting the Border Patrol people do their job will make the crossing the border more difficult for people because they've been held back from doing their job. I think that you can have a physical wall some places. We already have a physical wall some places. But a virtual wall using drones or using balloons or using electronic equipment to surveil the border, all those add up, as far as I'm concerned, to a wall. Because quite obviously, all you got to do is look at the map and see where the Rio Grande River goes. And there isn't much of a chance of putting a wall in most of the border of Texas with Mexico, as an example. And you shouldn't have to when you have the river that can be patrolled pretty easily. But I would expect some legislation along the lines of Kate's law, you know, or Sarah's law, because you remember the Iowa person that was killed by an illegal alien. I would expect those to get passed. I would expect restricting funding for sanctuary cities, because sanctuary cities violate federal law, because the federal government has complete control under the Constitution of immigration.
Well, and that's kind of my question, too, these sanctuary cities, which I've never really quite understood how that all worked, because it would seem to me they are, as you just mentioned, they're in violation of federal law, and how they get away with it, considering that there are millions and millions and millions of federal dollars that are going into these cities.
Well, that's why you get back to restricting the federal dollars that go to the cities, because then you put an economic pinch on them to do away with their sanctuary city designation and to cooperate with federal immigration authorities. Now, if they want to not accept the federal money and still be a sanctuary city, technically under the Constitution they can be, because the Constitution or the Supreme Court has said that it isn't possible for the federal government to make states do certain things. So there is some independence that maybe cities have from the federal government in regard to that. But I think as a practical matter, they can't give up the federal dollars that go to them. So that ought to be economic pressure to cooperate with federal law enforcement people.
Senator, I know you've already sent a letter to Vice President-elect Pence on the VA. Still lots of problems on this urgent need, including some substandard care and failure to hold employees accountable. What do you expect from the new administration as far as the VA goes?
Well, I would expect them to reimburse for care that veterans have to have at the emergency room if they can't get to a veterans hospital. I expect whistleblowers to be protected and respected and look into what they're saying is wrong, especially if it involves the quality of care or the lack of care. And I would expect that it ought to be easier to fire federal employees that aren't doing their job. And those are the things that we thought we accomplished when we passed legislation in August of 2014 that hasn't quite worked out the way it was intended to work out. But I think that we're not delivering the care to the veterans that was promised them at the time they enlisted, and that we aren't, when that promise is being kept, it's not being kept out in a timely or within a quality way.
And I know along those same lines, Senator, you'd also sent a letter to the Department of Veterans Affairs Secretary Robert McDonald about this Emergency Care Fairness Act. And that's kind of along the same lines that I guess since 2010, VA's not even complied with this law that where veterans should be reimbursed for emergency care.
Yeah, where veterans, well, that would be true whether veterans have insurance or don't have insurance. But where they do have insurance and it costs more than the insurance pays, the federal government under that law ought to be paying that copay, and they aren't doing it.
Speaking of medication, so to speak, there have been some misclassifications under that Medicaid drug rebate program. to make sure that the laws to fight the anti-competitive behavior are enforced, specifically this whole situation with the EpiPens. What's going on there?
Well, way back in 2009, 2010, the Inspector General of Health and Human Services said to the department, you're misclassifying these drugs, and nobody did anything about it for 8 years, almost 8 years. And the fact that the federal bureaucracy wasn't doing its job caused the taxpayers a lot more money to be paid for than should be paid for. And individual consumers probably got hit with a higher price as well. And so now what they're trying to do, since that's been made public that they didn't classify the drugs in the right category, which would have brought a cheaper price, we're trying to negotiate back from some of these companies, Mylan being probably the most prominent one, some sort of payment back to the federal government. And I heard that it was $467 million. But on the other hand, I'm told that the thing is still in negotiation. So I don't know if it's 467 or some more. But whatever it is, we need to get it collected. But if the bureaucrats have been doing their job the way they were supposed to, we wouldn't have been worrying about this, and the consumers wouldn't have been paying $500 a piece for an EpiPen, which is necessary for people that have allergies to peanuts, and they, when that allergy shows up, they can't breathe, and they would otherwise die without the EpiPen.
So we'll kind of stay tuned on that one as well, Senator. And I want to remind our audience today we are talking with Iowa Senator Charles Grassley. And if you do have a question for the Senator, give us a call here, 690-1370. Senator, I want to get back to, you mentioned a little bit about confirmation hearing for Jeff Sessions to be the new Attorney General. Of course, a Senator, you've worked with him. What kind of a person is he?
Well, first of all, very, very thorough in the work he does, very intent, and I should say tense as well. But because he does his homework, he's well respected. And the issues that are coming up now about things that when he was nominated to be a judge that came up then that I don't even think were legitimate at the time, but let's say they were legitimate at the time. I've served with him 20 or 22 years in the United States Senate. I know he's not the type of man he's been accused of being, and all the Democrats that are raising these questions that served with him know it as well.
All righty, Senator, we do have a caller standing by. We have Larry on the line, and Larry, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question.
I can't hear Larry, but maybe you can. Maybe you can repeat it for me.
I'll repeat the question. Yes, go ahead, Larry. All righty. Thanks for your call, Aaron. Senator, Larry's question was on the merchant marine that he had heard President-elect Trump was talking about beefing up the armed forces, and as it regards to international trade, wondering if there were any plans or anything you'd heard about beefing up the merchant marine as well.
Not specifically, but let me tell you that merchant marines are very essential, particularly in time of war, but I guess any time, to make sure that the military is thoroughly up to date on everything they need to do their mission. And so I don't see how there could be any consideration with beefing up the military that wouldn't to some degree, and I don't know whether that's more or less, but at least to some degree would include beefing up the merchant marine as well.
All righty. Well, I want to talk a little bit about kind of how ethanol fits into the whole plan for our president-elect. We've got a nomination of Scott Pruitt, he was the Attorney General of Oklahoma, to head the Environmental Protection Agency, and we've got Rick Perry, former governor of Texas, to lead the Energy Department. Of course, we're talking some major oil-producing states here. Any concerns how ethanol fits into that picture?
Yeah, we ought to have a lot of concern because politicians that are connected with big oil, as well as big oil itself, is a threat to anything they don't control. So I'm not talking just about ethanol, although that's the number one thing we need to be concerned about. But they don't want to sell any product that they don't control. And, of course, they don't control the production of ethanol. And that's why they're always fighting it. We've always won their battles against them in the Congress, but more recently they've been going to the EPA. But I'm somewhat confident, based upon what presumably President-elect Trump told Branstad, and I heard this from Branstad himself, that we don't need to worry. Since Trump is for ethanol, then Scott Pruitt and Rick Perry are going to be supportive of ethanol. And so that's what I got to go by right now. The only thing is, it's easy for people to say they support ethanol, but do they support the renewable fuel standard that guarantees that a certain amount, right now 15 billion gallons a year, has to be a 10% mixture with petroleum products for our cars? Are they really for the RFS? And that's what we've already made arrangements with the transition team for five or six of the Republican senators that come from big ethanol-producing states to meet with Pruitt and Perry soon after the first of the year before their confirmation. I just want people to know that when there's tens of thousands of jobs in Iowa related to about 43 ethanol plants, that Iowa is an energy-producing state just like Texas and Oklahoma is, and I'm going to be watching it. We ought to have the same respect for the amount of energy we produce, which is about the same as we import from Saudi Arabia, ought to have the same respect as what oil has. And I'm going to be watching very closely.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about this practice of fetal tissue transfers. I know your office, you've done some investigation in that and federal laws that govern this practice.
Yeah.
Now, from what I understand, you're going to refer some of these Planned Parenthood affiliates and companies involved with fetal tissue transfer and Planned Parenthood Federation to the FBI. What's that all about?
Yeah. Well, there's been laws going back to the early 1990s against profit-making, selling of parts from babies that have been aborted. And we found out that there hasn't been any enforcement of that law whatsoever. And I can't make a judgment of whether or not the law has been broken, but I think we got enough questions about whether the law has been broken, and the people that have broken it ought to be prosecuted. Now, that's my we can't make a determination of prosecution, and I think the press releases have or press statements have inferred that I know there's criminal activity. No, what we have done is refer our report and our investigation for further investigation by the FBI and the Justice Department. And if that investigation by the FBI, Justice Department, or anybody else that's involved with it leads to prosecution, then I can say there'll be possible prosecution. But Congress can't prosecute. Only the executive branch of government can do that. So that's why we call it a referral.
You know, I was thinking, Senator, that this, at least the news on this practice, had come out quite some time ago. But again, I know wheels sometimes turn a little slowly, but it just seems like there has been a significant amount of time from when this news broke that this was possibly, and I say possibly, going on till, you know, you're
yeah.
pushing this forward now.
Yeah. Well, there's first of all, you're right. It goes back to April or May, I believe, of last year. And I didn't have a committee hearing on it because I always use a hearing as the last thing. So I put my investigative staff on it, and they wrote to the four companies involved and asked for material, and we got a lot of material voluntarily. I don't know whether we got all the material we should have gotten, but we did receive 20,000 pages of documents that we reviewed independently of what we're asking the Justice Department to do or anybody else has done. So we did get this information, and it shows that there's possible violation of law. And when we wrote to the Health and Human Services Department and the Justice Department, there's never been anything done under this, and it leads to the question, has this law ever been taken seriously? And when laws aren't taken seriously, that gives other people that have bad goals in mind an opportunity to get around the law. And so some of our research showed that maybe for an aborted baby, they may be paid, less than $100. And then when the baby is dissected into various parts that different companies want to use for research, by people being paid $15 an hour, and then we have information from these documents that maybe they receive $5,000 or $6,000 for that aborted baby, then we know that it's in violation of the law, because the law says you can't sell this, you can't sell these parts for a profit. The law was passed with bipartisan support, only with the acknowledgement that this law would be enforced.
All righty, Senator, we do have another caller standing by. We have Verna on the line, and Verna, you are on the air. Go ahead with your question.
Well, thank you. It's my understanding that the welfare system needs a total redo. I understand that a lot of people on welfare are capable of jobs, and some of them do attempt to get jobs, but then they quit because they don't make as much as they do on welfare. Why can't you pay the difference so that gets them out of the house and, you know, they're able to be more out of themselves?
Thank you for bringing that up, Verna. And you have described an economic situation that is very real, and I won't have to repeat what you said because you said it accurately. There are people on welfare that are smart enough to know what the value of their welfare is, and then if they go to get a job and the job gets them a dollar over what their welfare would pay them, then they come to the conclusion, why should I take the job? Or if they, in good faith, take a job and find out otherwise, then they find out they don't have as much money to live on as if they were still on welfare, which is not only welfare, but it includes food stamps. It could include subsidized housing, subsidized heating, things of that nature. Whatever it is, you're accurate in calling it welfare. So the bottom line of it is, if we're going to get these people to work, we're going to have a phase out of their, not a complete cutoff, but a phase out of their welfare. And as their income goes up, then as it goes up, the elimination of welfare, or otherwise you're not going to get these people to work. So this is a perfect example of the federal government trying to be very humanitarian and help people in need, and I don't think any of us are going to argue with that, but the results turn out to be a disaster, because a job is the most important part of a healthy lifestyle. It's feeling needed. I don't know how many different ways to put it, but a job is so central to a normal life that when you give people incentives not to work, it just ruins their whole life.
All righty, Senator. Well, as always, our time goes quickly, but a few moments left. Anything you'd like to add before I let you go?
Well, after January the 3rd, I have to start my town meetings again because, you know, I go to every county every year to hold town meetings, and I'm going to start that process. I invite people to come to our town meetings. If people make trips to Washington for the specific person of telling me some things that are on their mind, I reserve 3 to 5 Monday through Thursdays for the weeks that we're in session, and that's about 40 to 42 weeks out of the year that we're actually doing business here in Washington, as opposed to my being home in Iowa meeting with constituents. I have 8 15-minute appointments, and if they call ahead and get on that schedule, I'll be able to talk to them that way. Otherwise, call in your opinions. If you leave your name and address, we answer on paper. And this is, whether it's a town meeting or a meeting here in Washington, or whether it's those phone calls or whether it's email, we respect your right to tell us what's on your mind, to ask us questions, to justify our position. And that's what representative government's all about, communication between those of us elected and our constituents that we serve.
All righty, Senator. Well, thank you so much. A Merry Christmas, and we'll be talking to you in the new year.
Merry Christmas to you and all the people in the 3-state area up there.